When we're young, we have an amazing, positive outlook about how great life is going to be. But somewhere along the line, we forget to dream and end up settling. Join Up Dots features amazing people who refuse to give up and chose to go after their dreams. This is your blueprint for greatness. So here's your host, live from the back of his garden in the UK, David Ralph.
Yes, hello there. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Join Up Dots. Yep, Join Up Dots, moving on to close to episode 1,000 now. And if you've been with us right from the very beginning, you can see that we've got varied stories of achievement and uphill struggles, failures, stumbles, and of course, conversation that pulls together all the dots of somebody's life. And today's guest is somebody that, I'll be honest, their background, I don't know anything about. I'm not big on American football, but this guy was. And he was an ex-American footballer who, after 12 years as a professional, was in an amazing place. He played for the Houston Oilers, NFL Europe, Scottish Claymores, CFL Montreal Alouettes, XFL San Francisco Demons, and even the AFL. And the reason he was in an amazing place was due to the fact once he retired as a professional, he realised that he'd gained an amazing insight into professional sports trauma. He'd seen and experienced the devastating effects of TBI and concussions and knew that there was a path to transition into away from the game. And that's a bridge that so many sportsmen struggle with. You put your heart and soul into creating the dream life that the majority of boys crave, and then what do you do when that short career is over? Well, our guest got his Doctor of Chiropractic degree, as well as certifications in advanced sports nutrition and concussion assessment. And ever since the movie Concussion came out, he made it his mission to not end up like his grandfather, who died from advanced dementia at 72. He's now written a book, created a web class, and plans on coming out with a line of supplements, all to help us be healthy in mind and brain. So it's all very well having insider knowledge, but how do you turn this into a profitable business that people want and need? And is there a quick fix for head injuries, or is it a simple case of trying our hardest not to get them in the first place? Well, let's find out as we bring onto the show to start joining up dots with the one and only Mr. John DeWitt. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning, David. I am phenomenal here up in the lake at Lake Arrowhead in California. It is a nice, relaxing time away from work, actually, getting to have some introspective moments on everything that's happened and where we're going from here.
You know, there's two things that wind me up more than anything is people that introduce themselves with, I'm in Florida and I'm in California. What a horrible place to live in, isn't it?
It is, but I was lucky enough when I played in NFL Europe to travel all around England and Barcelona and Germany and stuff. And I mean, it's really beautiful there as well. And I realize it tends to be a little gray in England and rain quite a bit, but it also makes all the grass nice and green. So that's nice too.
It is nice. It is nice. And California is one of my favorite places in America because there's so much variation, isn't there? You can have the mountains, you can ski, you can go to the beach, and you can go to the madness of LA. It's all on your doorstep, really.
It really is. And that kind of is a good thing and a bad thing because there's a lot of distractions that can keep you from being focused on whatever it is that you're trying to do in life.
Well, which is a good point, actually, and it's one that we touch on a lot on Join Up Dots, the fact that to have the entrepreneurial life when you create your own business, especially like you have done, the majority of people follow the sun and they end up in a place which is glorious, but they never go out and they have to close their curtains so they can see their computer screen and they sit indoors. It's got to be torture, isn't it? Wouldn't you be better being somewhere in Scotland or somewhere where you don't actually want to go out and you can create your fortune quite happily indoors?
Well, you would think so. And it actually is kind of funny because we've been up here at the lake for a week and I purposefully did not bring my laptop with me. And my wife was just, both of us were kind of, didn't know what to do because it is such a high pressure, always thinking about the next thing and researching the next marketing way to get to people and reach more people. And when you're out in the mountains, it's just kind of like, okay, our whole point of it was, okay, we need to detach, disconnect a little bit, go off the grid, so to speak, and just kind of get back to, okay, what's really important? We have our two dogs with us and be like, try to focus on that. And I mean, after an hour or two, we're kind of looking around and I'm sitting on the back deck, sitting at the back deck with this beautiful view of the lake. And I catch myself looking down at my phone and messing with my phone. And I'm just like, geez, it's just crazy. We get so caught up in everything. And I think that's one of the most important things for all entrepreneurs to do is it's really important to be driven. But at the same time, you need to take time for yourself so you don't end up being some 400-pound overweight you know, person that has no health either because they're so focused on their business. They got to take time to get out and exercise a little bit too. And a lot of times that helps the brain work better. So maybe you come up with better ideas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about your sort of background, because that's kind of fascinating to me on one level. And on the other level, I'll be honest, I don't understand a word of it. It's just boot a ball, stick your head up somebody's bottom, and then try to get to one end of the pitch, basically, as far as I'm aware. Is that factually correct? Am I spot on by that?
That is basically similar, yeah. I know, and that was one of the hardest things when we played in NFL Europe. We had to have an instructional part, a few pages in the front of the program for people to understand, what is this? I don't understand. We used to get in big arguments with the Scottish guys that were on the team because we had some national local players. And they were just like, these guys don't understand football. It starts and stops too much. It's not like soccer where you're just going all the time. It's not like rugby where there's no helmets or shoulder pads really. And they kind of thought that we were a little soft because we had to use all the kits. They used to say, you have to wear this big kit and you're out there running around starting and stopping. It was too boring for them. So,
just jumping in, it's not football. You hardly ever use your feet. Why is it not called something else? What's the point in that?
That is, I will have to take that up with the originators of the sport because I have no idea why it's called football, but it is. And, you know, I was a defensive guy, so I was one of the guys on the end trying to run around and tackle the guy that was trying to throw the ball downfield. And because of that, that ended up leading to lots of different head injuries and whatnot. Among other injuries, I tore out my elbow. My left elbow, I tore the bicep tendons in that. I tore my left shoulder out. I blew out my left ankle. But other than that, I was pretty good. But it's fun though for me because I grew up in a small town in Arkansas, and a really small town, like 85,000. That's actually the second biggest in the state. And so we had a very small town kind of mentality about the world where everybody just, if you're not like us, then there's something scary about that because it's different. And being able to fly over to Europe and play over there and meet all the different people made it really interesting for me and really opened my mind to all the different possibilities because everybody's getting a different way of looking at things. And I think that's really important to know, especially as an entrepreneur. You kind of have to know, okay, what is your specific avatar, as they say? Like, who is it that you're selling to and who's going to help, you know, benefit from whatever you're selling? And you have to realize they use different terminology, different phrasing. Like when I was in Scotland, I was dating an accountant for a little while. And one time she said, I made a joke and she said, are you taking a piss? And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? But I realized what she meant. But it was just kind of interesting, all the different phrases that other cultures use. But it's fun.
So when you look back on your life, obviously it was the big part of joining up the dots to where you are now. I don't think you would be where you are now without that. Was it your dream? Was it absolutely all you could think of as running as a kid? Or were you just naturally athletic and kind of fell into it? I don't know, in American football, if you can fall into it, are you picked as a young kid?
Yeah, that's an interesting story because my dad, he was a little guy, or is a little guy. And when he was in high school, he was probably about 135 pounds, and he got thrown in there and was playing football because his dad loved football, and so he thought he should love football, and he loved it, but he was so little, he got beat up so much that he quit when he was a junior in high school. And I am 6'4", my dad's about 5'10", and because I was so big, he just really was pushing me to play football, and I played, when I was in the second grade was the first time I ever played football, and the second day of practice, I went out and my mouthpiece fell out in the dirt and I didn't know I could wash it off. So I put it back in my mouth with all the dirt and grit in there. And I was just like, oh, I don't like this. So I decided to quit. I was like, it's too early for me. I don't want to play. And then it was kind of a popular thing to do, kind of like soccer, I would think, or rugby out there in Europe.
Yeah,
So I was like, okay, well, if I want to, you know, date girls and, you know, be popular and stuff, I should probably play football. So I started playing again in the sixth grade. And, it just went on to play, ended up being on the state championship team when I was in high school, which was a big deal. And when I went to Vanderbilt for college, I didn't actually have a scholarship. I just got into school based on my academic stuff. And they even told me that I was too small and too slow to play in the SEC, that particular conference. But I told them I wanted to walk onto the football team anyway. And they said, okay, well, you're able to do that. And that's when you just say, I want to basically hold dummies and be the punching bag for the guys in practice because, you know, they don't really expect you to get a scholarship.
Yeah.
But that is something that drove me to work extra hard and really, really focus. And I wouldn't do anything my freshman year in college. I would not do anything that I would thought would keep me away from my goal. So there was no, I didn't drink any alcohol. I didn't drink any sodas. I didn't do no junk food. I didn't do anything bad that would give me an excuse to not get a scholarship. And after my first semester, the coach said, "Hey, we're going to give you a full scholarship." So it ended up working out for me. And that was my first big win. But that was also my first big experience of when you set a big goal and you get it, you need to have another goal after that, or you're going to suffer from kind of an achievement letdown. 'Cause you're like, okay, I got my scholarship, now what? And that's an interesting story in itself. But, and then I went on and ended up playing with a bunch of other teams and coaching my high school team for a little bit and things like that. But it just, it was really exciting. But I would definitely say it's not something that my whole life, I just wish I could have played football and saw the guys on TV and wanted to play football like them. I just happened to have a natural ability and was a bigger guy, even though I was one of the smallest defensive linemen in college, but I was quick. So
you sound like Rudy. Do you know that film, Rudy?
Yeah, I do. That's so funny. I've actually met him, and when I was playing in the XFL, I signed with the San Francisco team, and we went off. I signed up. They brought me out, and it was right in the middle of the season because one of their guys had gotten hurt, and I didn't have a name on the back of my jersey yet because they didn't know for sure, you know, how long I was going to be there, and they didn't have time. And so they were flying out to Chicago to play the Chicago team, and that was 3 days after I showed up for practice. And it literally was like a movie. The two guys in front of me both got hurt. I ended up going in the game and had one of the best games. I had the most tackles of any defensive lineman in that whole game, and started doing so well that the stands, literally, I couldn't believe it. The stands started chanting something, and I didn't know what they were chanting. And then I look over, and one of the coaches next to me is chanting, and I'm like, "What are they saying?" He's like, "They're saying Rudy because you don't have a name on the back of your jersey. They don't know who you are."
Yeah. I tell you what,
it was pretty exciting.
That was one film. If anybody really wants a motivational film, that was one film that really choked me up at the end, just because this one guy just wanted something so much, and it didn't matter what was thrown at him. And most of us would have quit. Most of us would have gone, "Oh, there's no point in this. It's never going to happen." And as I was watching it, I think I was as emotional on that as I was on Toy Story 3. Toy Story 3 really got me at the end. I don't know why. I was crying like a baby, surrounded by 5-year-old kids looking at me like a wimp. But no, Rudy, did you think that is a true sort of metaphor for life? I know it's a simplistic way of saying things, John, but if you don't give up, you will achieve it. But do you think there is 100,000 other Rudys that never made it that we just don't know about, even though that they put their heart into something every single day?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are successful out there. And when you ask them if they knew that they were going to have to go through all the trials and tribulations to get where they are, would they do it again? And a lot of them would say no, but they are so focused on the goal, they don't think about what they have to go through. And I personally, when I went to the Houston Oilers, I was a free agent, so I had to earn my spot on the team. And I, once again, tapped into that super hyper focus, was working really hard, but I was also undersized. And I was so focused on the goal that they came up to me during training camp, towards the end of training camp, during the cuts where they cut people from the team. And the coach came up to me and said, "I'm sorry, we got to let you go." And I was just like, "Well, can I still practice? Because I'm already taped up and ready to go." And he's like, "No, you have to pack up your stuff." And he's like, "We're going to send you over to Scotland to play, so that gets you more experience and then bring you back." And I was like, "Okay, so I don't get to play?" And he's like, "No." And so that's a perfect example of, you try and do everything you can, and sometimes it doesn't work out the way you think it's going to. And I mean, ironically, I went to Scotland and we won the championship in the World League of American Football, which was the first bowl game I ever won, which was really exciting. Went back. This is another, it was such a weird, it's weird how life works, because we played in the championship game, I came back to the States and I only had a 2-week break before I had to go back into training camp with the Houston Oilers. And mentally, physically, I mean, everything, that was too soon for me. I couldn't handle it because my body needed to rest. And I showed up for practice and did really well with the Oilers and did all these strength tests and lifting weights and running and stuff. But then I was emotionally not prepared enough and not strong enough like I was the first time that I literally started to focus on, instead of focusing on the goal, I started focusing on I could potentially hurt myself, I could break my neck in practice and things like that. And I literally went in and told the head coach that I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. And I left. And I don't know how many people have, I mean, it's popular now for guys to quit their NFL teams, but it was like, I don't know if I was trying to beat them to the punch because I had just sacrificed so much the first time and they let me go. And so I just figured I was going to show them and I would just quit ahead of time. But it was a horrible experience. And I'm very thankful Coach Fisher was there. And he said, I want you to know, regardless of what happens, that you're not a quitter. And I thought he was kind of silly for saying that. But I really appreciate him saying that now, because I just didn't know what to do with myself. And then spent the next 10 years of my life trying to get back into that, into an NFL team, playing in all these other leagues. But it just never did happen because I was getting older every year. So just wasn't going to work out. So yeah,
I think we're all allowed to quit when it's not right for us. You know, when you find your thing and you know what it is and you keep on going, you know, I always talk about myself on this show, but I must have recorded hundreds and hundreds of episodes when hardly anyone was listening. But I just knew that it's what I needed to do. And so I sort of pushed through and it's all coming to the fore now. So if you was in a situation where your dad basically kind of almost threw you on the pitch and you were big and bulky and you could run fast and stuff, but it's not in your heart, then I think it's acceptable to quit. It's when it's something that's in your heart, that's when you got to go after it.
Right. You have to be true to yourself because you're the only person that knows how you feel about what you're doing. And if you feel like, you know, it's someone else that's forcing you to do it, even if you're good at something else, if it's not what you want to do or what you feel like you're meant to do, then it's not going to work out.
Absolutely. Let's play some words now that really cement that. Here's Jim Carrey.
My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Ooh, that is good.
It's very good indeed. So, well, when you listen to words like that, you might as well go for what you love. Are you going for what you love now, or was it what you loved before? Because you've got like two different careers, or have you still not found the love?
Oh, no. I've definitely found the love. And that's what's so exciting, is because it actually incorporates some of the lessons that I learned while playing football and the doctor of chiropractic degree that I went on to get, and then the sports nutrition, and then all the concussion fuss that's going on over here in the States. And I realized that if people are wanting to play football, or if they want to have their kids play football and they're worried about concussions, then I need to figure out a way to educate them as much as possible to make it as safe as possible for the kids, so their parents don't feel guilty thinking that they're sending them out there and they're going to have brain damage later and it's all their fault. I mean, you do learn a lot of great lessons in team sports. I mean, football is just one of them. But in team sports, you realize that, you know, you're just a part of a bigger whole, and you learn discipline. You learn how to socialize with other people and how to help other people get what they want. And that helps get you what you want. And it's all those really important life lessons. So it definitely, and it was funny because my wife pointed out, she's like, this is so meant for you and so perfect for you because you know football, you know a lot of these guys, you played with a lot of these guys, and I have friends calling me saying, you know, my neighbors down the street are pulling their kids out of football because they don't want them to have concussions. And I'm just like, well, that's kind of like, it's kind of like a Salem witch hunt right now. Everybody's panicked and thinking everybody's going to have a concussion if they play football, because they came out with a study recently that said, you know, 99% of professional football players are going to have concussions and CTE and long-term brain damage and things like that. But then there was just recently an article in Yahoo Sports by a brain pathologist that studied brains for a living, and he has an 11-year-old son, and he's like, and my son plays football, and I'll tell you why. He's like, because that study that came out that said 99% of the NFL players have bad issues with brain stuff, that's out of millions and millions and millions of people that play football. So that is a very skewed, biased study that came out, but everybody's latching onto that because it's really a good, juicy story to have on the news. And he's like, it's not true. And you can get concussions from a variety of from epilepsy, from other, medical conditions. And they're showing CTE in those people, and they never played football. So I just want to make sure everybody's able to get on the same page and realize, let's not panic and let's not start pulling people out of sports. Let's just get ourselves more educated on what's going on, which is why I did the webinar, to help people kind of understand where coaches are coming from, where the medical staff's coming from, and just kind of have everybody step back and take a breath and say, okay, what's the real risk? What can we do to help reduce the risk? And that's when the whole idea of the supplement line came in and things like that.
So you came to the end of your career. This is the interesting part of the conversation, really. And as I say, you put your heart and your soul into it, and then you decided it's not right, so you've transitioned. What was that bit in the middle when you're sort of looking around? Because a lot of people, maybe it's stereotypical that we see, end up sitting in bars talking about the glory days for the rest of their life, instead of actually finding something else to put their teeth into. Was there a period of mourning? Was it woohoo time and you just rushed around? How did you transition?
Well, and that's an interesting thing too, because of the fact that I hadn't always grown up wanting to be a football player and identified with that as being who I was, and that's all that mattered in life. I knew the year or two when I knew I was starting to get older and started to be the same age as the coaches I was playing for, I said, all right, I'm not going to be able to play football forever. What could I do? And each of these teams had chiropractors that worked for the team specifically. And so I started asking them, what does it take to be a chiropractor? What do you do? My sister is a pharmacist, and I even between seasons went to pharmacy school for a year and decided I didn't want to be a pill pusher and just trying to cover up the symptoms. I wanted to actually focus more on the entire body, more of a holistic approach, and help people know how to be healthier and have better lifestyle choices. So that I literally was playing in an arena football game in Las Vegas against the Indiana team. The game had just, it was probably three or four plays into the game, and had an offensive lineman. I had one of the guys roll up trying to block me and blew out my ankle. And I'd already talked to a chiropractic college about, getting the process going and was going to start the next season. And he blew out my ankle, and I was like, yep, okay, that's the universe telling me it's time to stop. And so I called up the school and I said, can I go ahead and start early? And they said, sure. And so there wasn't a huge gap there, which was actually a nice thing to have that not be a gap, because a lot of people that I know, I was talking to Jeff Fisher when he played for the Bears. Walter Payton was there. And when Walter Payton retired, he suffered major depression because after you're used to going out and hearing tens and hundreds of thousands of people yelling and screaming your name, and you're all over TV, and now all of a sudden you're expected to get like a regular job. There's no job that's going to have people yelling and screaming and clapping for you. So it takes a big change and a big shift. I mean, I consider it lucky now, but at the time I didn't. But since I wasn't as, big superstar, recognized, marquee player, then that would have been a big change and hard for me. But because I wasn't, I still, I was just kind of the workhorse guy that would get in there and wear his hard hat and get his work done and then, be done. I was able to make that transition a little easier. And because I went to Vanderbilt, I like to think that I had enough cognitive ability to kind of figure out, okay, what I like biology, I like anatomy, I want to work, in that capacity somehow. What can I do? I'll be a chiropractor. Okay, I'll do that. And then even after that, after chiropractor school, when I graduated, that was right in the middle of the big real estate bust that happened out here in California, especially. And it was just insane. And there were no salaried positions. And there were no, it was all, you bring in people and you get to keep half of whatever you collect from them. And I was just kind of like, oh man, that's not really what I was hoping for either.
So was that why you transitioned to actually work for yourself then?
Well, I was renting space at first, just renting space at an office down the way. And then I decided to partner up with a guy up here in Orange County that's really successful, super, super busy practice, and see thousands of people a week, which is great, and getting a great experience interacting with people and helping them. But even then, at the same time, it wasn't, it just, there was always just something missing. I'm like, okay, I'm helping a lot of people. That's good. What, there's just this nagging thing every night when you're going to bed, you're kind of like, there's, I just feel like there's something more. There's got to be something more. And so that's when I, when that movie Concussion came out in 2015, I was like, oh, what can I do to help these people that are, they're worried about this, that might have experienced this already. And, that's when the whole idea of doing the concussion class and the book. And I mean, I was amazed because I had a farm in Arkansas when I was a kid, and we had horses and stuff like that, that there's a huge percentage of people that, that ride horses, equestrians and rodeo guys and stuff like that, that have concussions because they don't want to wear the helmets like they're supposed to and stuff like that. So it's a huge group of people that need this information. And so I figured, I don't really see a lot of that out there, so I need to get out the information from somebody that's experienced concussions themselves and can help with that.
This is brilliant, isn't it? This is one of those stories that really does join up all your dots. You know, almost every part of your life, it was screaming at you what you will be doing in the future. But of course, you had to wait until that film came out, which I haven't seen myself. So what was it about that film? Do you remember sort of half watching it and half thinking, oh my God, and the brain had gone because you were focused on your future?
Right, right. Well, what happened was I was watching the movie, and it took me a long time to watch the movie because my wife, she watched it, and she was like, I don't know if you should watch it or not. And I was like, no, I'm going to watch it. And it's about Dr. Malu. He's from another country. I don't know if it was Ethiopia or Kenya or something like that. He'd never played football, and he was a genius at neurology, pathology, issues with the brain. And he came out and discovered that he was this was crazy. There was a guy, Webster was his last name. He played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a lineman and a huge superstar, made all this money and retired. And they found out that he was actually living in his car and couldn't think straight. He would like pull his teeth out with pliers. Oof. just because, and then he would like super glue them back in. He had to taser himself just to be able to sleep at night because he was in so much pain. And he ended up dying, and this guy ended up, or his body ended up going to Dr. Malu's office for him to take a look at him. And so when he did the autopsy to see exactly what was going on, he expected his brain to be like Swiss cheese, like an Alzheimer's kind of brain. But when he opened up the brain, it looked fine on the outside. And he was like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. And so what he did is he did all these microscopic analysis and all this and discovered these proteins called tau proteins that were clumped up in patches all throughout the brain. And what that does is it blocks the nerve impulses from being able to communicate. So that's why he was having all these weird emotional things and rage and depression. And it's because his brain wasn't able to make the connections anymore. And so he came up with the term chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And he connected it to football. And he said, you know, this is connected to football and he should not play football. And it just, you know, I appreciate everything that he's come up with, and he's come up with a second book recently, and he's, you know, on all the speaking tours talking about how he says no one under the age of 18 should play football. And I'm just like, okay, wait a minute. Cause there are a lot of kids, especially in the lower income areas of the States, where that's their ticket out of that poverty, is to play football, get a scholarship to play football in college. And you can't do that if you don't play football until you're 18, because that's when college starts. So there has to be something else. You can't. And I, like I said, respect everything he's done. I know he's a really well-written guy and knows what he's talking about. But I, at the same time, I think there's a little bit of it, of him jumping on the bandwagon of everybody's going to get it if you play football. So nobody play football. And it's just not. I don't think that's a good approach. I think you need to see both sides of the story. And that way parents and people that are interested in playing can make an educated decision on what they want to do as far as football goes.
Because you've got a great branding, haven't you, really? That you are somebody that has walked the walk and can talk the talk. You know, you've been there. It's not some doctor who's just looking in the medical books and coming up with a theory. You've actually seen it. So have you seen players that literally have... Because I don't think I've ever been concussed in my life. If right. I have, I don't remember, probably because I've been concussed. But how do you know? How do you know if somebody has got concussion, if they just sort of bang their head a little bit?
Well, they do what they call sideline assessments. And back in the day when I was playing, it was funny. I can't believe I'm saying back in the day, like I'm 100 years old. It's so weird. But back then, especially when I was playing professionally, if you know, they used to call it getting your bell rung, where you hit heads with a guy or something, and you go cross-eyed for a minute, maybe you lose consciousness, maybe you don't. I mean, it's only 5% of people that have concussions actually get knocked all the way out. And so I went cross-eyed once, that was in practice, but you don't say anything to anybody because you don't want to lose your job. You don't want them to say, oh, you need to get checked out by the trainer.
Yeah.
And back then you wanted to be the big tough guy that could take anything and keep hitting me. I'm good. I'm strong and whatever. But they've come out with some really great tests now. One of them is the King DeVick test that, it has a really easy, it has four different cards. It has a test card and three additional cards that have little numbers on them. And all you have to do, I mean, they do a basic assessment when somebody's injured in a game, they'll come up, they'll ask them, do you know where you are? You know, they'll have them squeeze their fingers to make sure their strength is the same, make sure they're, you know, aware of where they are, what day it is, who they're playing, who they played the week before, things like that, just to make sure that they're aware of what's going on. And then they can take them on the sidelines and hold up these cards. And the important, crucial thing is, and one of my goals, at least in the States to start, is to have every school have baseline concussion assessments done on every student. I know every student is a little much, so every athlete at least. And that way, if they go in, they time you to see how fast you can read these numbers, and then the numbers get closer together and kind of a little more scrambled, so it's a little harder as you progress. But you get a baseline test, and that's their time. And then say that same person gets concussed in a game, you come up to them, you have them read the card, And if their time is any slower at all, or if they have errors, they don't read the right numbers, they read something different, like they shouldn't, then you know they're having cognitive dysfunction and they have to be pulled from the game. And there's a whole protocol of returning to play, returning to school. It's all about resting. People used to say, if you have a concussion, don't let them go to sleep because they could die. And that's the last thing you want to do. You want to make sure, obviously, you check their pupils to make sure one's not dilated and the other one constricted, because that indicates what they call a subdural hematoma, which is a brain bleed. That's one of the major, you know, dangers of concussions. But you have to have your rest. You have to, in this day and age, you have to make sure they're not texting too much. If they're kids, they're not playing their video games too much, because that stimulates the brain too much. It needs time to rest. But that's one of the things I realized after concussion. The cerebral blood flow decreases by up to 50% for 7 to 10 days. So that's why one of the things I came out with the supplement is something that's going to increase the blood flow to help make sure that it's able to have that life-giving blood to help heal it faster. But there's also a variety of other technical things that I won't go into too much, because it's called the neurometabolic changes that happen in the brain, that there's a big energy deficiency because it's trying to pump potassium back into the nerve cell, because potassium's flowing out because of the impact. And as it does that, there's calcium going into the cell, and it goes into the Krebs cycle, and there's a shortage of ATP. And so then there's another reason why you need to increase the omega-3 fatty acids, because those have been shown to help boost cell membrane strength. So that can actually heal the brain after it's been concussed, and it can actually strengthen those cell membranes that can also give you another layer of protection against concussions. And it's so funny, because some of the folks that I've been consulting with are saying, you know, you can't say that if you're going to take a supplement, it's going to keep you from getting a concussion. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's going to give you an additional layer of protection, because nothing, even the helmets now, they're proving, aren't able to make you invincible to concussions. And so obviously a supplement's not either. But this is just another layer of protection. I couldn't believe in the first game of the season this year, 5 players on the Texans team got pulled out because they got concussions. And that's the only team I heard about any concussions. So I'm like, what happened? Why is it the Texans that are only having the concussions? I thought that was odd.
And well, do they do that, though, generally, though, John? Do they? Because I would imagine sort of in American football, it'd be, oh, come on, don't be a girl. Get back in there. You're all right, you know. It's pretty harsh, isn't it?
But especially now because of the big scare of concussions, they want to make sure they're not going to get sued for something later. And so they're very quick to pull players out and say, okay, well, we're going to have to take you out for the concussion assessment. And they have an independent assessor comes in to make sure that they're okay before they go back in the game. I mean, that's just part of it. And that's why there's so many younger NFL players that are starting to retire early now, because they're worried about the long-term effects of concussions. But like I said, it's understandable to be worried, but just have a little more education on what's going on and what the real risk is. Because, I mean, personally for me, the whole reason I got into this really is because my dad, as you mentioned earlier, his dad died of advanced dementia and Alzheimer's when he was 72. My dad, actually, he's 73 right now, and he's got some short-term memory issues going on that's scaring me half to death, because he stopped playing when he was a junior in high school. So on a selfish note, I'm coming out with this stuff so that I can take it, so that I make sure that I'm doing everything I can so that I don't forget who I am in a couple of years.
And now, how do you know it's medically kind of proven and it's not, you know, I've got this image of you going down in your basement and your chemistry set and creating kind of madness down there.
No. Well, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of research articles out there. You just have to look for them. And there's also something that the FDA has approved the statement. They can't approve the actual substance for some reason, but they've approved the statement that phosphatidylserine, which is in my supplement, has been shown to reduce the effects of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and dementia. So they've already approved that, that phosphatidylserine does do that. So I made sure I put that in the supplement as well. All the studies are out there. The one thing with the studies is you need to make sure with the supplements that you have the same concentration of whatever ingredient it is in your supplement that was used in the studies that they're talking about. Like, for example, St. John's wort was a really popular thing for depression a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I do have some St. John's wort in the supplement, but it's not at the same concentration that a lot of the studies were done at. Because personally, a lot of the studies when I was reading, there were a lot of negative side effects and interactions with other medications at that particular concentration. So I decided it would be safer to have a lower concentration of that in the supplement. But then some of the other basic herbal things are like ginkgo biloba, vinpocetine, huperzine A, all these different herbs that they've been using back east in Eastern medicine for years, if not centuries. So it's all been proven, you know, working out there. So if they're still taking it out there, it still works. And it's just taken a long time to get back to the West Coast out here, I guess.
But how do we know that the combined mixture is suitable? How would I know, being sort of a devil's advocate, that I take it for, you know, trauma, and then I wake up the next morning with enormous testicles or something, which we didn't expect? How do we know?
Right. Well, what happens is you're gonna the supplement.
Because I don't want enormous testicles, sir. I really do not want enormous testicles.
I'm sure they're big enough already. So what you can do is on the website as well. It's at mybrainmed.com. There's a research section that has multiple studies. I've posted the actual research articles so they can read them themselves to see that this all works. There's no interactions with those two drugs. There's four of those, they call them nootropic herbs. Four of the nootropic herbs in there all are meant to increase that cerebral blood flow. And so that's what's going to help to heal the brain faster. And as far as any negative side effects, things like that, they're all natural herbs. Some people are sensitive to that. Some people aren't. But there's not going to be any major toxic side effect like a prescription medication. That's one of the biggest things, like with St. John's wort. Compared to back then, they were using Prozac for depression. St. John's wort had maybe a 5% chance of a negative interaction, where the other one had a laundry list of negative interactions and side effects. So it's just a safer way to to try. It's like taking vitamin C. I mean, you just take that, and if you take too much vitamin C, you'll get diarrhea, and that'll let you know that, oh, okay, I took too much. That's pretty much the worst side effect you're going to have. Worst case scenario, if you take it and you don't like it, we have an empty bottle policy where you just send us back the empty bottle and you get a full refund. So it's like, okay, you take it, and you know, some medications, some supplements do take at least 4 to 6 weeks to start showing the effects. So you got to give it a good shot. But if you don't think it works, then just send us the bottle and we'll send you your money back. So it's not really going to cost you anything.
So is this your, just before we sort of bring you to the end of the show, is this your big thing? Is this your legacy work, or are you going to be bringing out other stuff?
Oh, there's going to be multiple stuff, because there's so many. In my studies, I found out there's so many different things that can help the brain health, and I'm just coming out with these two, and then I'll probably be adding at least another 4 or 5 over the years. But this is definitely, this is my baby. This is the reason that I'm on this planet, is to help people and to optimize this formula. And I look for feedback from people. If they, you know, think, oh, you know, it was good, but not quite, you know, whatever, then I'm welcome all those critiques so that I can tweak the formula and get the updated version, whatever, you know, 2.0 or that needs to be out there to make it as effective as possible.
I think what you need to do is you need to sort out a potion that makes ladies feel very sexy after a hard day's work. That's what you need to do, and you'd be a multimillionaire, mate, instantly.
I think that's called Chardonnay.
Yeah. But the trouble is, after 4 bottles of Chardonnay, it goes out the window. That's the problem. It's the quantity of Chardonnay that my wife consumes. So let's play some words now, just before we bring you to the end of the show. And these are words that Steve Jobs said back in 2005 and created the whole theme of the show. Here we go.
Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
So those words applied rather nicely to you, I would imagine.
Absolutely. 100%.
So when you look back on your life, as I always ask everyone, John, is there a big dot in your life when you look back and you go, God, yeah, if it wasn't for that one thing, I really don't think I'd be where I am today.
Absolutely. And I think it's what I mentioned before, when I left the Houston Oilers and literally told people that I'd left, and people didn't believe me because they're like, nobody leaves an NFL team. I think doing that was when I finally was standing up for what I personally felt like needed to be done. I just, for whatever reason, if I was focusing on, you know, not focusing on the goal or focusing on the downside, not the upside, I don't know. But I think that if I had not done that, then I would not be where I am today.
And I think you're doing really good work. You know, I've looked around your website, I watched your webinar, and there's a hell of a lot of upskilling that people don't appreciate on building a business, not least the sort of the sales funnels, the technical stuff, the education that has got you into this position. It feels like you're at part of a journey that's almost over, but it's only starting as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's definitely the early part of the journey. I'm just trying to make sure I pack everything I need.
Well, as long as you got your toothbrush and and a packet of Trojans after the 4 bottles of Chardonnay, you'll be fine. You'll be fine, John.
Oh, good. I like it.
It will be perfect. Well, this is the end of the show now, and this is the part that we call the Sermon on the Mic, when we send you back in time to have a one-on-one with your younger self. And if you could go back in time and speak to the younger John, what advice would you give, and what age would you choose as well? Well, we're going to find out, because I'm going to play the theme, and when it fades, you're up. This is the Sermon on the Mic.
With the best bit of the show, the Sermon on the Mic, the Sermon on the Mic.
Okay, you're going to have a lot of people telling you what they think you should do with your life. They're going to be people saying you should play football, that you should not play football. You should be a doctor of medicine, be a surgeon, you have to be able to be strong in yourself and know what it is that you want in your heart. You have to just follow your heart in those quiet times before you go to bed. Just kind of do a little deep breathing and just be like, hey, is this what I want to do? Or should I try something else? And sometimes trying something else can be really scary, but just know if in your heart of hearts, if it feels like that's what you're supposed to do, that's what you're meant to do, then you should do that. Even if that means that you're going to have to step away from something that a lot of other people that you care about think you should do, that might not necessarily be the case. You have to be true to yourself, because at the end of the day, it's only you that's looking back at you in the mirror, and you have to be proud of what you've done and the decisions you make, and know that when you get there, there's no one that got you there, but you're deciding to do it yourself, and you're not going to have anybody to blame. You don't want any excuses. You want your life to be your own, and know when you get there that is where you want to be, because your gut, your heart, your inner spirit wanted it so badly. You have to listen to that, because God wouldn't put a vision in your mind or in your heart if he didn't mean for you to have it. And you don't have to know how to get there. It could be tricky, but you just have to focus, lightning focus. Every single thing you do is just laser focused on what you want to do, and keep going back and double checking with yourself. Be like, hey, does that feel like what I need to be doing? And if it does, then keep going. And if it doesn't, then you need to make a diversion and kind of change the route, because every trip on an airplane, they don't just say, okay, I'm going to fly from Dallas to London. There's all kinds of course corrections throughout that journey because of the crosswinds, trade winds, all that stuff. So you always have to be making different corrections to get to where you want to go. But as long as you're checking in with yourself and your true self and your heart, you're going to get to where you want to be.
Great advice, and great advice for all of us. And for anybody out there, John, who's interested in finding out more about trauma and the work that you're doing, what's the number one best way that our audience can connect with you?
The web class would probably be the best. It's a free web class. It's at concussionclass.com. And then if they wanted to get more information specifically about what's in the supplements, that is at mybrainmed.com.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else there as well. It sounded like there was a list on the way. John, we will put all the links on the show notes to make it as easy as possible for everyone to connect with you. But thank you so much for spending time with us today, joining up those dots of your life. And please come back again when you've got more dots to join up, because I do believe that by joining up the dots and connecting our past is the best way to build our futures. John, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, David.
John DeWitt, American football player, ex-American football player, and I'll be honest, I don't know anything about American football in any shape or form, although I have been to one game in my life and saw a quarterback called Jake Plummer from the Arizona Cardinals, only player that I remember, and he had a good afternoon, apparently, I don't know, but fascinating stuff. And what I liked about that was the fact that he was willing to upskill himself. You know, everything we talk about on Join Up Dots is rarely about just finding your path and just being there. Being is perfect, and you just go, oh, this is easy, you've got to walk through. You might find your path, you might think, oh, this is a great idea, but then the real work starts. But as long as you've found that thing that seems like a right idea to you, you can work through anything, you really can. And it's all online. You can get yourself a coach, get yourself a mentor, whatever. You can listen to podcasts, but it's finding that thing first of all. John's done it through his history, and I'm sure that all of you will do it as well. Thank you so much for listening to Join Up Dots, and we will see you again soon. Cheers. See ya. Bye-bye.
David doesn't want you to become a faded version of the brilliant self you were once to become. So he's put together an amazing guide for you called the 8 Pieces of Advice That Every Successful Entrepreneur Practices, including the 2 that changed his life. Head over to joinupdots.com to download this amazing guide for free, and we'll see you tomorrow on Join Up Dots.